You're listening to episode 9 of the Tennis Files podcast with special guest ATP Pro Jason Jung.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Welcome to the Tennis Files Podcast, bringing you advice from the top minds in tennis to help you improve your game. And now, here's your host, Mehrban Iranshad.
Hey guys, welcome to the show today. I'm really excited to bring you yet another really informative episode of the Tennis Files Podcast. Before I mention our guest and go into his background, I just want to give a shout out to Andrew from Perth, Western Australia. I woke up a couple mornings ago to a really nice email from Andrew, and he said that he had just discovered my podcast and website, and he's really enjoying listening and reading my articles. And he said that the content is excellent, and he's looking forward to seeing more great stuff in the future and to keep up the great work. And so it's really emails like these that really inspire me to do my best for you guys and to bring you guys the best content that I possibly can in my podcasts, articles, and videos. And I really appreciate all the support from everybody. So thank you to everyone, and thank you to Andrew for the nice email. I really appreciate it. So today I am going to be speaking with Jason Jung. Jason is a great player who is currently ranked 245 in the world, and he played college tennis at the University of Michigan, where he was a top player. His hometown is Torrance, California, and so he's currently on his about fifth year on the tour, and he is grinding out ranking points mainly on the Challengers Tour right now. He won a futures tournament in the beginning of last year. And since then, he's been playing pretty much all challengers and then playing some higher level events as well, trying to get in the main draw of those tournaments. So I just wanted to bring Jason on the show today to get an idea of his experiences playing on the Challenger Tour, and as well as what he has done and is doing right now that helps him become one of the best players in the world. And he also has a really cool blog over at jasonjungtennis.wordpress.com, and I'll have that link on the show notes at tennisfiles.com/9. But yeah, it's a really cool blog, and I think you should check it out because he talks about a lot of cool things regarding his experiences on tour, and he has a lot of pictures and reflective articles on there. So I really hope you enjoy and learn a lot from my interview with Jason Jung. And without further ado, here is the interview. So Jason, how did you get your start playing tennis?
I started, my dad was a recreational player, and he used to take my older brother to the tennis courts, and I kind of just tagged along. And we grew up at a tennis club, so I guess I was always around tennis.
Yeah, I mean, it's always great to get that exposure in the beginning, and then it's just amazing to see how much you've grown from that young time of playing tennis. And so what were some of your fond memories of life as a young tennis player?
Well, growing up at a tennis club, I was able to play with a lot of juniors at the club, and a lot of the adults were really nice. When I was 10 years old, a lot of them started playing against me in singles ladders, and every Saturday I'd play challenge court, play doubles, and there was just always a lot of tennis and competition throughout my younger junior days, and it was just a lot of fun being around at the tennis courts.
So would you say you're a really competitive, young player?
Yeah, I think so. I was competitive at a young age because I was, well, I started playing tournaments since 7 or 8, I think, at the club. So it was just always around.
You know, it's clear that you've, in looking at your record, you've been, you were always at the top of the juniors, like pretty much since you, you know, from the, I guess, the 10s or 12s on. But what were some obstacles that you faced as a junior that you had to overcome in order to get to the top and stay there?
From the junior standpoint, maybe, well, I was always smaller than everyone else. I didn't grow until probably my senior year in high school. So I was always really small, skinny, and most of the other kids hit a lot harder than I did. So I almost had to develop a way of playing where it would allow me to win. So it was kind of like, I think I always played like a chess player. I was always thinking on the court, and because I wasn't going to overpower my opponent, so I was always thinking out there.
Yeah, I can definitely tell from watching some of your matches, like when you beat Taylor Fritz in California, that, you know, you're just a smart player and you never seem to go for too much. And, you know, like you said, tennis is a chess match. And a lot of times when two players are at the same level, you know, the distinguishing factor is whoever has the optimal strategy.
Right.
So, yeah. And so what was, in your opinion, your biggest win as a junior player?
I think when I was 16, we had a men's open in Southern Cal. It was one of the bigger men's open in Southern Cal. And the winner got a wild card into the LA Open, the ATP, when they still had it.
Wow.
And at 16, I beat some good players along the way, and I was able to win that tournament. So I think as a junior, that might have been my biggest tournament win.
Wow, that's pretty crazy. I mean, how was the experience when you actually played that professional tournament at 16?
Yeah, it was kind of overwhelming at first. I played Wayne Arthur's first round.
Oh, wow.
And I was still really small, so his kick serve was quite good, so a lot of times I couldn't even reach it. It was going over my head.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, and doing a really quick Google search, he was like, his highest rank was around 44, so yeah, that's no joke. That's pretty cool that you got that experience as a young player. And so I guess now shifting kind of to college, what made you decide to go to college and play college tennis as opposed to maybe turning pro?
Yeah, so I did have the decision. I was thinking about pro or college, and ultimately it came down to my physical structures, like my body was still not as developed. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the biggest reason why I decided to go to college, was to develop physically.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a smart decision, because you can obviously, I mean, especially players as good as you can, you know, get a scholarship basically to go play it for the best universities and play high level players, and then also get, you know, subsidized training and stuff. So I think that's pretty awesome.
Right.
And so how did you end up choosing Michigan?
Well, I had a couple top choices, UCLA, Virginia, Michigan, and not a lot of people know this, but I actually did sign with Virginia first.
Mm-hmm.
And I graduated high school a semester early, so I was planning to go in January, but things didn't work out with the coach at Virginia, and ended up being kind of recruited again. So like I had to go through the recruiting process twice.
Hmm.
And since Michigan was one of my top three, I ended up choosing Michigan over UCLA. And yeah, so I actually didn't go to college early as I planned to, but it actually worked out okay. I was able to travel a lot for tournaments during my semester off.
Yeah, I mean, that's great, Jason. I think, you know, it definitely worked out, because you got to play number one for, I guess, the majority of your time there and develop your game. And I mean, obviously, you're playing at the highest levels of the game right now. So definitely worked out. But so in particular, how did playing college tennis, I guess besides the physical development, really help your game?
I think college tennis, it's just it puts you in a competitive environment. There's always, you have your teammates and you're always training, whether it's on the court or at the gym or on the track, and you're constantly, the biggest thing was there's always resources around for you to get better. So as long as you're willing to put in the work, I think it's a great advantage to be in college.
Yeah, for sure. And Jason, yeah, what were a couple specific things that really helped your game and cause, like, you know, perhaps maybe a specific drill or, you know, some sort of training that you did that you remember that really, you know, helped you persevere and become a better player in college?
I think maybe playing a lot of doubles helped with my transition in singles. Being able to play a lot of doubles meant more returns and more serves, more first volleys. So it just helps you develop as a singles player as well, I think, because you see the court differently. You're always, for me at least, I was trying to attack more and come in more. So naturally, if you're serving and volleying in doubles a lot, you're going to look for the volleys in a singles match.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, that's a great point. I mean, you know, obviously I'm nowhere near the level you are, but playing in juniors, like, I was always just playing singles, so I was used to just grinding at points, and then when I'd have a short ball, like, I wouldn't really know what to do. So playing doubles really helps, you know, you develop your volleys, like Jason said, and also, you know, you have to direct your returns much more accurately than in singles, and so doubles will definitely really help your game out. So Jason, you know, for those people who don't quite understand the structure of the Pro Tour, can you describe for us what the Challenger Tour is, which is what you primarily have been playing lately?
Yeah, so Challenger Tour, most of the guys playing are, well, I mean, some guys who play could be top 50, but usually guys are around 80 to about 300 in the ranks. Which is quite competitive. Everyone's all very close. And I think it's very tough to get to that next level for the Challenger, because it's you get a lot of guys who are very good in the top 200, and sometimes it just depends on if you can get through one or two matches and then run away with the tournament win, and that develops your confidence. Because a lot of guys have done that. They can get the win for the tournament, and once confidence starts rolling through, you're able to beat a lot of the, I don't know, let's say top 150 guys. Because I think a lot of the level from 80 to 200 is quite similar. It's just the confidence factor.
And, you know, so I noticed that, you know, you've really been progressing quite well from your start in 2012. You were, I guess, 1240, and then you keep moving up. I guess at the end of 2012, you're on 500, and then now you're up to 245. So I guess stepping back, what would you say is the difference between the Futures level and the Challenger Tour in terms of, I guess, you know, how the players play?
I think the Challenger Tour guys are more consistent, that's for sure. And most players have more tools. They've either got bigger serve or bigger forehand or something that kind of separates them. But I think the biggest thing is probably consistency, because a lot of the Futures players are talented and have shots, but sometimes they're not as disciplined. And they may go for a shot that you're not supposed to, and that kind of sets you up into a bad position, whereas in the Challengers you're going to get less of those. And I think with each level, futures, challengers, and ATP, there's just the guys just make one less mistake. So, and sometimes that makes all the difference.
Hmm. And so again, like looking at your, the tournaments you've been playing, you know, you've started to really, well, you have been dominating the futures tournaments so much though, so that I recognize you haven't played one for many months now. So when you decided to, you know, primarily play challengers, is that purely a function of your ranking? Like once you get to a certain ranking level, then you never really play futures? Is that kind of how it works?
Yeah, it was when I stopped. I'm not sure when my last one was, but it was more of the ranking because I was getting into challenger main draws. So I wanted to take that next step up and see what I can do against the better players. But also, this is currently my fifth year on tour. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to give myself the best chance and not go back down to futures to try and gain some points or put some more points back on my, I guess, to try and defend points. I wanted to keep playing at the challenger level to see if I really had what it takes to play with the top.
Right, for sure. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, I think for anyone out there, you've got to constantly challenge yourself and play, you know, the highest tournaments you can in order to truly see what you need to work on. And also if you can, you know, reach the next level. I mean, that's what it's all about. But yeah, and just, I guess, as an aside, like looking at the last futures you played was in Little Rock, Arkansas, and you won that one. It was back in April. Very late. Congrats on that.
Thanks.
Yeah, no worries. But yeah, so I guess now looking to your plans, I guess you touched a bit about it, but what do you think you need to improve in your game to start making more main draws in the 250s, 500s, and Grand Slams? I guess besides, you know, developing like a razor sharp confidence, as you mentioned.
In terms of my game, I've been developing my serve a lot more and it's gotten a lot bigger and I've been able to utilize it as a weapon. And the next step after that would be more of the short balls, not necessarily at the service line, but more like kind of in no man's land. Like you hit a big serve and the ball lands in no man's land and you kind of want to control the point from there. I've had some trouble with that. Not trouble, but I haven't really developed it yet. And I think that's key in my own service games to be able to control the point from the first ball.
Right.
And also, I've been working a lot on transition, just trying to look for opportunities to be aggressive and come in and put it away with a volley.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's definitely tough because, you know, at first, I guess I'm just thinking along my lines too. But when you were like shorter player than the others, like your natural game would be more of like a grinder, and then to become aggressive and all that, it's I guess stepping a bit above what you're used to. I mean, maybe not for you, but for others. But yeah, no, that's great to hear those things that you need to improve, and I'm sure you're going to do that and really crush it soon. But you know, for to provide, I guess, some real insight in, for our listeners as far as like what they could do, can you tell us maybe like a couple, like, you know, pretty basic point patterns that you use that that win you a lot of points?
I think the most basic one that I've been trying to do recently and still have a lot of trouble with is sometimes I change direction too much.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, I think it depends on how athletic you are, and because if you take someone like Murray who changes direction, he'll go cross and then line right away.
Right.
But he can get away with it because he's so athletic, and even someone like Djokovic. But if you take someone like Ferrer, he's going to go cross most of the time and set up points that way. So, like a drill that I've been doing recently is just I'll play with someone else and they can hit anywhere and I just have to hit cross.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of, it seems really easy, but it's actually really difficult to be disciplined in staying to go cross because your instincts are always that you want to change directions, but I think when you stay cross, you'll be surprised at how many points you can actually win.
No, that's actually really awesome insight. I appreciate you telling us our listeners about that drill. Would you say that, you know, even at the pro level, you can kind of simplify the game and, like, you know, predominantly play cross because it's usually easier than changing direction, and also, I mean, obviously, like, less height, the net's lower and all that. Like, is it mostly?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's awesome. Something very interesting with Jason, which I love and really have enjoyed, is he has a blog that he maintains online at jasonjungtennis.wordpress.com, which I have read, and it has a lot of great pictures from him traveling all over the world and grinding out ATP points and, a lot of his friends and family and people that he meets. But Jason, does writing a blog about your experiences kind of help you become a better player?
I'm not sure. That's a great question. I only started the blog because I wanted to update my friends and family on where I was and how I was doing and kind of like what I was going through. But after a few years of writing it, I think it's actually been great because I don't know how much longer or how long I will play, but, you know, looking back on these experiences, sometimes you forget what you go through, and it's just great to look back on it.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, it's great for you as well as for us. And I think, you know, obviously, as you do in the blog, you reflect on things, and it makes you think deeper about certain things. And also, you can even keep it as a log of like how what happened and what you need to do in the future. And you wrote a blog about pressure as well. I just want to ask you, what in your opinion, what's the best way to handle handle pressure?
I think pressure. Pressure is a tough one. Everyone handles it differently, and as tennis players, that's something, or even any sports player, that's something that we need to always be better at. But I think just to know that pressure is always going to be there, it's never going to go away, and sometimes it's actually a good thing because it makes us perform. I think when you have a lot of pressure, it either makes you or breaks you. It helps you perform your best because you know that you have something to do, you have work to do, and you have to be at your best. So I think just being aware of pressure, that it needs to be there, is a big thing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, pressure is a great thing. It means that there's something to work for and accomplish. And, as you said in your blog post, that, you know, you just have to take it one match at a time, and that's the best way to go about it. So, Jason, now I've got a lot of fan questions that I received well, because I posted in advance that I'd be interviewing you. So I'm going to try to get in as many as I can. You know, sure. Just, yeah, obviously Jason is on a strict time schedule. He's a professional. So, I'll try my best, guys. But so I guess the first one is from a gear fanatic, Chris. He wants to ask if you ever mess with new rackets and or strings during the season.
Yes, actually, that's a tough one because last year, I was using, or actually 2 years ago, I was using, I've used Yonex primarily my whole tennis life, and they stopped making this racket that I really like, so I had to find something that was kind of similar, and it actually took me quite a long time, and I ended up switching to a Babolat, and that didn't work out for a few months, and then I switched to a Prince.
Jeez.
And then I went back to a Yonex. So, yeah, it is tennis players do switch throughout the season. I mean, you're always trying to tweak your game, and you want something that – you want a racket that actually helps your game. Like now I want a bigger serve, so I've been using a Babolat, which has helped my serve. So the answer is yeah.
It's awesome. And just curious, is it Pure Control Babolat or
do you Pure Drive?
Oh, Pure Drive. Oh man.
Plus, yeah, the longer one.
Wow, those have a lot of power. That's awesome. And just curious, what strings do you use right now?
Right now, I'm using Solinco Tour Bite 16 Lite.
Oh, very nice. I appreciate the info. Sweet. Now, Paul from Virginia wants to ask you, what are your top three best money-saving tips you used or learned while being on the tour?
Money-saving tips. Probably staying at hotels, you need to room with another player. That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And the other money-saving tips, flying wise, I don't know how other players do it, but I usually just buy one ways because sometimes you don't know your results or where you're gonna go,
right.
And it ends up being more if you have to change your ticket. So exactly. I don't know if that's one.
Yeah, no, that's a good one.
The other thing, well, with food, I try not to be too frugal about that one because I think that's important to how your body works in a tournament.
Exactly. I mean, I was just hoping you wouldn't say another tip would be to eat McDonald's or something like that.
Yeah.
but so I guess shifting on that point, Rob wanted me to ask you, what's your diet like?
So I've changed quite a few times. I think two years ago I went a little crazy in my opinion. I was trying to eat less meat or less processed food, and I was reading ingredients quite strictly. I was trying to keep it real clean. But in the end for me, I thought I've always been trying to gain weight, and I didn't think it was helping me sustain the energy I needed. So about a year ago, I just started eating not whatever, but I started eating, stopped worrying about certain foods that I used to be and started taking in more food. So right now, I don't really have a strict diet, but obviously I try not to eat like fried foods or anything like that, or soda, anything like that.
All right, that's great. I mean, that sounds pretty reasonable, you know. I mean, and it sounds like more of a sustainable diet than going super strict. And, you know, everyone's different. Not everyone has to go on the Djokovic diet or anything. But,
right. Yeah.
You know, so... let's see. And so Jay wanted me to ask you, in your entire career, what is one match that stands out to you the most to this day and why?
One match. Ooh. I'm going to have to probably just recently last year in December, there was a wild card tournament for Aussie Open, and it was only a 16 draw, and only the winner would get a main draw wild card, and that was it. Just the winner got the big prize, and I got to the finals, and I just remember being, I don't think I've ever felt really that nervous and that pressured ever in my whole tennis career, and it was just it's crazy the amount of nerves I had, and I ended up winning the first set, but by the third set I started cramping because of my nerves. I was so tense.
Wow.
So I think that was probably the one that stands out the most.
I know. I appreciate that. I mean, it's, you know, no matter how much we preach to focus on the process and think about strategy, I mean, sometimes it's just can get overwhelming. But, you know, when you keep doing it and keep being in those positions, then it's going to become easier.
Right.
So another one for you. What tournament do you look forward to most each year?
There's not a specific tournament, I guess. Maybe one of the bigger ones, since I've been able to play a few more in the last year. Indian Wells is always nice. And last year I played French Open for the first time, and that was really special. And hopefully my ranking will be good enough to get in again this year. So hopefully I'll be at the French this year.
Yeah, for sure, man. We're all rooting for you. And, you know, you did have a pretty good qualifying at Indian Wells. You beat J.P. Smith, who I think is ranked higher than you. And then, you know, tough loss against Harrison. But, I mean, he beat Chilich recently, and he's been in form. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, it's not a bad loss at all. So, I guess a couple more for you, and feel free to cut me off, you know, obviously, if you have to leave. Doug and Towson Tennis, they want to ask, do you believe more in on-court or off-court training? And, like, what's kind of, is it like a 60-40 or, like, you know, ratio-wise, like, how would you describe on-court versus off-court training?
In terms of tennis, physical, or?
I think you probably, yeah, I guess let's go with both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think 60-40 tennis or on versus off. I think you definitely need to develop the game first. If there's something technical like your forehand that needs work,
right,
obviously you want to be technically sound first. I mean, obviously exercises and off-court training, all that stuff helps your body move and be more explosive or more limber, but ultimately it comes down to hitting tennis balls. So if you've got bad technique on your forehand, but you've got great explosiveness, it doesn't really work. So I'd probably say 60-40.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, Jason. Tom has a really good question. He says, he asks, rather, as a player at the highest level of the sport, have you ever felt like you reach your potential at that time, like your ceiling? And then if so, what did you do to break through that ceiling to get to the next level?
I think that's why I'm still playing, is because I feel like I haven't reached my ceiling yet. I think I'm still improving and getting closer now. So, when I get to that ceiling, I'll answer that question.
Yeah, good. That sounds good, man. And last one, have you ever had a time where you made the main draw in a singles and doubles, and this is from Pat, by the way, you've made a singles and doubles main draw, and then you've had to decide whether to stay in one or the other, or have you've always just played both?
The only time, probably when, sometimes at challenger levels, you play singles and doubles, and there's two consecutive tournaments and you've lost in singles and you're still in doubles, but you're not in the main draw of the next tournament. So you're in the qualifying, and qualifying starts on a Saturday. So sometimes you kind of have to decide if you want to play, if you want to get to the semifinals or finals with doubles in that first week, or you want to, I guess what they call it is tank, and then focus on singles and go to the next week to play qualifying. So it's happened to me a few times, and I mean, ultimately I want to play singles, so I ended up choosing singles.
Yeah, I mean, it totally makes more sense. And I have seen like a video of a doubles match of two teams tanking, which really looked ridiculous on YouTube.
Yeah.
I won't name the players, but you've probably seen it. Jason, I appreciate your time so much. I just want to close with one more question, then we'll get some of your social information. But so for our audience, what would you tell them, in your opinion, is the key to improving their tennis game and reaching their potential?
I think as much as we try not to look at rankings, I think that's it kind of sets a benchmark at where you are. And from there, you can kind of evaluate how you're playing or how you compete against higher players. So I think in order to keep improving, you need to keep looking at the top players and kind of see what they're doing and see if you can incorporate a few things of what they're doing and put it in your game. So, I mean, the top players are obviously doing something right and it's working. So I think to improve, always need to study players that are higher than you.
Yeah, that's awesome advice. I really appreciate that. And that's exactly what Jason is doing. You know, he's competing with the best in the world. And for example, he recently took Yuzny to a tiebreak, and you know, you're just doing really well and you're consistently getting wins in challenger events. And I'm sure you're going to break through, and be looking forward to watching you play in the biggest stages. But Jason, so where can our audience find you on, you know, either social media or anywhere online or any support pages or anything like that?
Yeah, so like you said, I have my blog, jasonjungtennis.wordpress.com, and my Twitter is pretty easy, jasonjungtennis. I've got Instagram. Nice. It's JSNJUNG. I've got Facebook. Just my name, Jason Jung. So I'm pretty social media friendly, and I've actually within the last 6 months I've been on this tennis warehouse forum.
Right.
People ask questions, and I'll kind of answer if I'm on it. I'll try and answer as best as I can, sort of like what we were doing just now. So pretty social media friendly, so feel free to message me.
Yeah, Jason, we really appreciate that. I really wish that more pros were more accessible like that. There's not too many, but you know, Jason, really appreciate you being on the Tennis Files podcast today, and you know, you're doing really well, rising up the rankings, and we all wish you the best of luck, and we'll be watching you and supporting you. So thanks so much, Jason, for talking with us today.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jason. Take care.
Thanks.
I hope you guys learned a lot from listening to my interview with Jason Jung. It's always really awesome to listen to the best players in the world talk about how they got where they are today and what they keep doing to keep themselves at the top of the game. I'd really appreciate it if you guys took a moment to review the Tennis Files podcast on iTunes or on whatever podcast app you use to listen to the show. For iTunes, you can just go to tennisfiles.com/iTunes in your web browser and then click on the blue view in iTunes button. And then from there, you can click on write a review. And that would be very much appreciated. And I just want to read you guys a quote that I found to be pretty motivating. And it's from George Halas. He said, "Nobody who ever gave his best regretted it." So by the same token, I just want you guys to always give it your best whenever you're doing something that really matters to you, whether it's your tennis game or other areas in your life. And when you give it your best, when you give it your all, then at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, you will have no regrets and you'll accomplish to the maximum of your capabilities. And that's really what is the most satisfying of all. So I just want you guys to keep improving, keep finding ways to be the best that you can be. And I look forward to keep serving you and seeing you on the next episode of the Tennis Files podcast, number 10. And on that episode, we're actually going to be talking with Doug Neagle, who is the head coach of the Towson Women's Tennis Program. And we're going to talk about recruiting, scholarships, and, you know, the college tennis game. So that's going to be a really interesting episode because we're going to find out, you know, the whole recruiting process and giving yourself the best chance of getting a college tennis scholarship. So it's going to be a really informative episode. So I know you won't want to miss that one. That's going to be very interesting. Even if you're past your college age or whatever, it's still going to be cool. And you'll be able to tell your other friends who may have kids who are going to go to college soon what they need to do to give them the best shot of playing on a college team and maybe even getting some money to do that. So I wish you guys all the best. Keep improving your tennis game. And we'll see you on the next episode of the Tennis Files podcast. Take care, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Files podcast. For more tips to help you improve your tennis game, visit tennisfiles.com.